Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Lauren Pope.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today's program is part of a multi-week series where we're highlighting national organizations involved in pro-life work across the country. The purpose of this series is twofold. First, we want to help Christians better understand the wide range of organizations working to protect human life, including groups that come from different religious, philosophical, and political backgrounds. And second, we want to learn how others are making the case for life in a culture that doesn't always share our faith, and what we can learn from those approaches as we talk with people from diverse backgrounds about life issues. Today, I'm joined by Lauren Pope, Executive Director of Rehumanize International, a nonpartisan, non-sectarian human rights organization dedicated to protecting human dignity and providing a culture of peace. Lauren, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
So on Life Matters, we usually discuss making the pro-life case through a Christian lens. But today's conversation is an opportunity to hear how the case for life is being made through human rights lens and how this perspective can help Christians engage more effectively in a divided culture. What are some common arguments you hear and how do you respond?
Well, we get, you know, the same arguments that everyone who's pro-life, you know, gets.
Yeah,
the, well, you actually just hate women and you do this. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit harder because it's like, well, look what we're doing in all these other ways. You know, it's a little bit more challenging, but you still get it. You still get that kind of thing. We also get the arguments that we're, you know, trying to like smuggle abortion into like, oh, you really are just like not truly caring about, you know, immigrant rights or something like that. You're just like using that as a cover so that you can, you know, do your, so we get some like accusations of disingenuousness from both sides of, you know, the little aisle. We actually just had a really funny thing. So we're in DC right now for March for Life, ahead of March for Life. And we went out and did some, you know, sidewalk chalk messages. And someone had come and they were all kind of like vaguely progressive-y left-leaning ones. Like we have a t-shirt that says like no violence and then it lists, you know, 20 people that you shouldn't have violence towards. So it's like no violence against immigrants or no violence against women or gay people, or, you know, just like all of these things that in other and the bottom is, you know, unborn. And someone had come and like smudged out the unborn. And I was like, well, the rest of our message is fine. But that, you know, this, I was like, how must that have felt to be like smudging out, you know, like you deserve violence. So we get that where people just don't want to listen. You know, they're, even if they agree with us, they're just closed off to anything related to abortion. And so you just have to, you know, we plant a seed and you move on. And sometimes you're not going to change your mind immediately, but maybe confuse them a little bit.
That's a good thought. I think about that, you know, sometimes, you know, I've come in contact with people, have conversations with people that say, well, I value life, but I don't necessarily agree with all these other things, you know, that a particular platform might agree with. And I'm like, well, just because you don't agree with all of them, you don't have to throw this one in the bucket with that one. You know, you can still be for life and against something else. It doesn't, it's not an all or nothing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we tend to try to make it an all or nothing. It's all, you have to believe everything or nothing. So on a national level, what changes have you seen since post-Roe?
Oh, gosh. So I think that, you know, it's sort of in stages of post-Roe. Immediately, there was a lot of panic about what things were going to look like from, I mean, obviously, both sides of panic, more so from people who were pro-choice about like, oh, but even in the pro-life movement, kind of panic about like, what is the structure going to look like? What's going to happen? What are we going to be doing? And so now I feel like we've sort of gotten a handle on what things look like. But it's interesting to me that, you know, as it's gone state to state, the arguments have gotten a lot more fragmented and specific to what your state is doing. So it's a little harder to organize nationally now, because it's like what's happening in Virginia has nothing to do right now with what's happening in, you know, North Dakota. So you have to be like, keep your eyes on so many different balls about what's going on. So that's been an interesting thing as a national organization to try to keep a handle on. And then it's just, it's been interesting too, to see that some politicians specifically sort of act like, well, we overturned Roe, what more do you want from us, right? And they don't realize that that was step one, but we have a lot more steps to go. And so keeping that pressure on is also difficult, because there's, again, like the abortion pills and Health and Human Services and all of how that's playing out is really the next thing, especially, like I said, where I'm in Louisiana, we're trying to take some legal action to hold doctors who prescribe the pill into Louisiana accountable. And it's very, very challenging, because those doctors are usually in states that have shield laws that won't do extradition and that sort of thing. So
absolutely.
Situation.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the rehumanizes justice after Roe framework.
Okay. Yeah. So this was something kind of created by our former executive director and founder, Amy Murphy. And again, it was sort of coming out of the restorative justice framework generally. But more specifically, I mean, you know, historically in previous to Roe abortion law and really even beyond that, the woman has always really been looked at as a victim of the abortion industry and abortionist, and abortionist as the person who's being held criminally liable. And this does that as well. It's heaped in that framework, but it really is looking at, like, what would it look like if we had women who are post-abortive as part of a sort of restorative justice thing, to have them have their community there saying, like, here's how we could help to support you so you're not forced into this situation again, and so you're not making these decisions again. And recognizing the harm that's been done, but like there's the criminal harm by the abortionist, but then there's also a lot of time the more subtle harm that comes from people living, you know, in poverty and living without resources and living, you know, in kind of this like despair that leads women to abortion. And so it's looking at that aspect of like what as a community we could do better to support women. And then in terms of the abortionist, looking at how could we hold abortions accountable in a way that is workable in our system of, again, 50 states with 50 different laws. And what does that even look like? But having some sort of framework to have them have some sort of accountability towards the women hurt by abortion. So
I feel like that's something that's come up a lot as different states are, you know, and to have different laws and, you know, what justice looks like, you know, for the woman who perhaps has had an abortion, or for the physician, or like, you know, like you were saying, for those physicians that are, you know, writing prescriptions for states that have banned abortion. So I think that's a very valid conversation about what actually does justice look like. Why do you think we need to seriously think about what justice looks like after abortion is restricted or outlawed?
Well, because I think that, you know, it's a very, abortion's, it's a very strange sort of legal anomaly, right? That we had something that was illegal and then was legalized completely and then expanded to basically have no restrictions. To now we're putting restrictions back on it, but with like large loopholes. And so trying to work out, like, what does it actually look like to say we are going to defend pre-war and life, I think is sort of where we come from with it. And I think, I mean, my personal thing that I've just been kind of beating the drum on is, like, we've got to stop these pills. Like, if we can, if we can limit the pills, if we can get them as a controlled substance, if we can keep them from flowing in, then we can make a meaningful difference. Because then when you're in a state that has laws restricting abortion, it's actually meaningful, because there's not just, you know, abortion by mail, which is what we essentially moved to. And so that's something that I'm just really hoping from a legal perspective that we can get a structure in place that keeps those drugs from moving around like they currently are.
Yeah. Yeah. It just amazes me how I feel like our country has just been duped into accepting the abortion pill as it is. And, you know, that's one of those, how do you get the genie back in the bottle? I pray that at some point we will be able to, but if we could do that, it would change so much for the unborn and just the abortion industry in general.
Oh, absolutely. I know that they have, the pro-life movement has been working to show that the physical issues related to the abortion pill are so much more severe than they were supported, and that the risk of hemorrhage and the risk of infection and all of these things way higher than they were said to be when the pill was first released. And then even within that, when it was first released, it had very narrow prescribing guidelines. You had to have the pill taken separate occasions at the doctor's office and all these things that have been completely eliminated now. And so just from like a public health perspective, it's such a risky situation. So I'm really hoping that we can get attention on that so people can know that, again, even just purely from this is a dangerous drug.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And as a parent, I have teenage daughters, you know, and it's terrifying to me thinking that they could just order this pill online and not even know that they're, had taken it and could have horrible, horrible complications that you had no way of, anticipating or helping them through. So
absolutely.
I'm really hoping that we can at least have some sort of common ground on that with.
Yeah. Now you would think, I mean, once again, if I'm just encouraging my listeners to do a little research. If I feel like if across the nation, if we knew the effects of the abortion pill, we could potentially put the genie back in the bottle. I just think we've just not paid attention. We've just allowed things to take place that is really hurting women. What some people think is a help, it's not really helping. It's very detrimental to the health.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview, and it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark. Today we're talking with Lauren Pope, Executive Director of Rehumanize International, as part of a multi-week series where we're talking with national pro-life organizations about their work. We're also doing this so that Christians can better be equipped to speak about life with neighbors, coworkers, and family members, and so they can better understand how pro-life work is evolving on a national level. So one of the strongest themes in your work is listening to women who have experienced abortion. What have you learned by listening to their stories rather than debating with them?
Oh, well, I think the biggest thing is that when you talk to women who have had abortions, they talk about so many aspects of their life that was broken and, kind of in shambles, that it wasn't almost, it's very rare that their reason that they had the abortion was because they just actively did not want to be pregnant because of, some reason. It was almost always because I was in an abusive relationship. My parents told me they would kick me out of the house. I had two other kids and we are barely scraping by and I can't afford daycare again. And it's all these reasons that really are not about the baby at all, or this feeling of like have no, like there's no way forward and they can't get way out of the situation. And, you hear a lot, like if someone had just told me this, then I could have maybe, gotten out of it. And so I think that's something that we as pro-lifers really need to understand is that there are so many ways that you can support, pregnant women that can be the difference between if they are able to continue the pregnancy or if they feel like the only option is abortion. And that is where pregnancy resource centers play such a huge, huge role. I mean, that's been their mandate for, since before Roe, is like being that being that group that can say, hey, we're here to you find a path out of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
absolutely. I often say, you know, having an abortion is not typically something that's on someone's bucket list. They're dealing with real fears, real concerns that may seem, you know, not a big deal to me. But if you're thinking that, man, my dad might put me out, you know, or I'm going to lose a college scholarship, you know, so it's very much situational and not necessarily baby related. I think that's a very good clarification there. Very good insight there.
Yeah. And I mean, you do get sometimes people who are just like, I never want to have the right thing, but it's, but very often, especially if they're willing to talk to someone and they have like regrets and they have, you know, like strong thoughts, but it's often because they felt like they didn't have any other path out of the situation.
Yeah. And, you know, some women may want to share their abortion stories, not to just promote abortion, but also so that others don't feel alone. Without revealing any names or personal details, can you share any stories that you've heard?
Yeah. So I can share, and I'll say this because this is a public forum that, you know, people can look at. But so if you are ever curious about women who are, you know, having recently had abortions or they are in the process of it, the Reddit forum, the Reddit/abortion, and you can't and shouldn't, you know, like communicate with these women because it's the way, you know, you can't join it unless you're like active part of it. But you can read what they're saying and see what they're saying. And it's so often like they're talking through complications. First of all, someone's saying, hey, I took this pill and I'm having a lot of bleeding. Is this normal? And then you have someone else saying, that's when I would go to the ER, you know, so they're kind of offering this like support from that kind of perspective. But then you see, you know, a lot of stories of people who kind of the same thing. They're like, I'm scared. And then they ask a lot. What I see very often are looking for reassurance that they're not a bad person, right? Like, I'm doing this, this is my reason. But I feel like I'm a bad person. And then so there's like that reassurance of, no, you're not a bad person. You know, and I think that's also a very interesting thing where I think the pro-life movement can talk to people is that they have the sense of, I'm doing this bad thing that's incongruent with my values. And I have to sort of be like talked into why it's not actually incongruent with my values. And that's where you get a lot of the clump of cells and a lot of kind of that kind of talk. And so I think we need to do a good job of compassionately telling the truth so that, you know, you can, if someone is going to make that decision, make it fully understanding what they're doing and not trying to kind of, you know.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, some women describe abortion as a pivotal life-altering experience. Like even when they're talking about perhaps that it was a regret. Why do you think abortion so often marks a turning point in a woman's life?
Well, I think that for some women, it can be sort of a wake-up call, right? Like if you were in a bad relationship that you knew was a bad relationship, but you're just sort of like continuing on, and then you have this abortion and it sort of clarifies in your mind, I can't keep doing this. This is like kind of the rock bottom moment to that. Yeah. And then I think for a lot of women too, it can become something where in retrospect, you know, like 10 years later, you're thinking back and you're thinking about like how life would have been different had I continued, because that always is, you know, just as humans kind of how we think, it's like what life could have been like if I had taken this other path. And so with an abortion specifically, you know, like I might have had a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old child now, what would that be? And I think that is an impactful thing for a lot of women.
Yeah, I agree. And so even with that, you know, I'd say even here at Assure, we see those stories of, you know, women that for whatever reason make the decision to abort and perhaps to come back, or maybe it's the first time they've already experienced an abortion. But they often talk about the grief, the silence, and the isolation. Even within, you know, it's okay for me to have an abortion in that frame of mind. But it really speaks to the emotional reality surrounding abortion. And I feel like that's something else that we don't take into consideration. The emotional effect that it has on a young lady.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, that's another thing in that the Reddit abortion forum that I was talking to you about that you see a lot of times, like, I didn't expect to be this emotional. I didn't expect for this. Like, I was very sure of my decision. And now I'm feeling very emotional about it. I wasn't anticipating that. I didn't think it was going to like bother me as much as it does. Like, I still don't regret it, but it's really, you know, making me emotional, you know. And so you see things like that because you really don't know what you're going to feel until it's over, until it's done, until it's something that can't be taken back. And then it also has a big impact on relationships. You know, I think there are a lot of men who just sort of are like, I can't really say anything. This is your decision. Yeah. And then if a woman's really upset, they fall back and like, well, it was your decision, you know, and are not really offering any kind of emotional support at that point either.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think we see a lot here, where he will say, well, whatever she wants to do is fine. And I think sometimes she's just waiting for him to say, yeah, let's have this baby. Hey, we can make this work.
We can make,
And the men lose their voices. They abdicate that they are abdicating their position in that relationship for their voice. And it's just sad to see, you know. Sad to see. You know, some women may choose abortion out of fear, like fear of family rejection, fear of that boyfriend leaving, financial instability. Like I said, fear of losing the scholarship or, you know, just different things. What do you think that reveals about the failures of our community?
Oh, wow. So I think, you know, it reveals we are all so siloed individual in our current society where you just feel like you have to be doing it all yourself. And if you can't hold it all together, if you can't do this, there's not any real safety net for you, you know. And it puts a lot of pressure on individuals. It puts a lot of pressure on, you know, young couples, young families to feel like there's just so much that you have to get right and we're doing very little. And it's also a lot of the way that our the social safety nets that we do have are set up. It's very precarious. You can lose benefits very easily. You can, you might lose it just because like politicians change the requirements or something like that. Or you might make $10 too much on your paycheck. And it's all of these things that if you are living very close to the wire, it's a hard place to be. And it's also, you know, from just a personal level, families are more disconnected than they used to be. People are further apart. People aren't as engaged as they used to be. I mean, even just like in my own family, I grew up going to my grandparents' house every single, Christmas and summer vacation and all these kind of things. And my kids don't see their grandparents nearly as much. And I think that's very common in a lot of families that it's just people move away. People aren't physically near supports. And so you're really on your own in a lot of ways. And people feel that sense of I'm on my own and that I am the only person who can, you know.
Yeah. This. From your national perspective, how do you see the face of pro-life work changing right now?
So again, it's becoming very, very state to state. I see a lot of activists in, you know, their particular states, Right to Life group or whoever, having a lot of focus there. The national focus has gotten a little bit less important, and the state focus has become very important.
Lauren, what gives you hope as you look at the future of the pro-life movement?
So what gives me hope is that there are still so many people who are actively engaged. I was scared that with Dobbs, everyone was going to fall away. You know, I was afraid it was going to be just checkbox and we are done with that. And it was going to be, even with March for Life, I was like, is there still going to be a March for Life? Right. What is it going to look like? Yeah. But there are still so many people still so engaged, still working all throughout the different levels of government, trying to put protections for the unborn in place and to still come alongside women. And if anything, the pregnancy resource centers have become more important and, you know, more activated. And so I'm hopeful that the movement is going to continue to make progress and work towards a day when really abortion becomes unthinkable. And it's just not something that we're having to so actively, you know, fight against all the time.
Yeah. That's the same hope that I, that's the same thing I think as well. Just, there's just so many people that are still involved, still have a love for the unborn, a love for life and value life. So when I get discouraged in the work that we do, perhaps the girls that come through, and if sometimes it may feel like we're not making a difference, but we actually are. And there's so many people that support what we do, that are praying for us, rooting for us, having those tough conversations, loving on those who perhaps don't think the same way we do. And it's it all kind of plays together. But there is hope because there are so many people that still value life and are willing to fight for it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So for listeners who want to learn more about Rehumanize International, where should they go?
So you can find us online at rehumanizeintl.org or on Instagram, Facebook, etc. If you type in Rehumanize International, you will find us. And we also, like I said, we have an annual conference. It's usually in October. And this year, it's looking like it's probably going to be in Chicago. So if you are interested in learning about these things in person, we'd love to have you there. And you can learn more information about our conference at rehumanizeintl.org/conference.
Yeah, great, great. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today and for reminding us that standing for life means standing for every human being with truth, mercy, and courage. And to our listeners, if you or someone you love is struggling with after an abortion, please know this, healing is possible. You're not alone. We would love to connect with you with compassionate, confidential help and hope through a Sure Woman Center. Thank you for listening to Life Matters. Until next time, may we continue to choose life and work together to build a culture of life.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bott Radio Network.